This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
14 African countries now, the first coal plants are being developed. It's completely crazy. Economies that could just be leapfrogging to a renewable energy economy.
That's Hefa Schuschking of the German organization Ergowald talking about the rising number of coal-fired power stations. Details coming up also. A Congolese doctor who helps victims of sexual violence will jointly receive the 2018 Nobel Peace Prize today. And the president of Tunisia has taken a number of actions to isolate the party with the largest number of seats in parliament. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, on December 23rd, voters in the Democratic Republic of Congo choose a new president and parliament in elections delayed by 2 years. Incumbent President Joseph Kabila, who has governed since 2001, is barred by the Constitution from running. His hand-picked candidate, Emmanuel Ramazani Shadare, is considered favored in the campaign despite being under sanctions from the European Union for his past role in suppressing the opposition. VOA French to Africa reporter Anastasia Tudish is in Kinshasa covering the campaign. She spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson today about how it is progressing.
Well, the campaign has been going very diversely, depending on if you are in Kinshasa or in the cities inside the country. In Kinshasa, you will see more of presidential candidates banners, and also more and more of parliament chair seekers. Well, whereas inside the country, it's more of the local deputies that people see more. But it started very slowly because the deputies were waiting for money. That didn't come. That was not coming. That was very slow to come. So it's a difficult campaign for the local deputies because they are lacking money, they are lacking means, and it's not very easy, as you can imagine, to visit the whole country. Let's just remind our listeners that DRC is the biggest country, sub-Saharan African country.
Now, yesterday, President Joseph Kabila, who is constitutionally barred from running this time, gave two interviews in which he said that he would not rule out running for office again in the future. How has that been received there in the DRC?
So far, I haven't noticed any move of rebellion or anger or even the lack thereof. Congolese people are really right now they live their lives one day after another. They take life one day after another. Mm-hmm. One thing I can tell you is that they will not let these elections be stolen from them. They have reached a point where really these elections better happen. And they better be sure that the elections are transparent, and they really want to make sure that they won't be stolen from what they want to see as the head of this country.
Now, there's one woman running for president, and there are several women running for deputies. How are they being received in the campaign? Is there support for the female candidates?
Well, 52% of Congolese are female, so they are well received. Marie-José Ifoku is the woman running for president here, and she has been. I would say that she really doesn't care. She's not asking herself if men are not too angry or are okay with her running for president. She really is a very strong woman, and she's opinionated, and she even offered her profile, her name, to gather all of these opponents who couldn't find just one man. And she said, since you failed, let me be your guy. So this is for the presidential, for the woman running for president. As for deputies, there are many. You can see them all over the city of Kinshasa. And they are very, they are pretty well received. You know, women are very strong here. Congolese women are very strong. They are the pillar of the society and of family. And it's only natural, even if I've done some vox pops and asked men, and they kept telling me that that's not where a woman should be. And that's very interesting to hear people in the street saying that and see these women running for deputy chair and, you know, having some support.
That was VOA reporter Anastasi Tudish in Kinshasa speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson. A Congolese doctor shared the 2018 Nobel Peace Prize today with Yazidi rights activists as the Nobel Committee put the focus on those who help victims of sexual violence, especially in times of war. Dennis Mukwege, who works in Bukavu, dedicated his prize to people who have suffered from sexual violence around the world. He also expressed concern for his country as the presidential election looms on December 23rd. Mukwege says he is very worried the voting won't be fair, free, fair, credible, and peaceful. If that's the case, he told News Service that his countrymen won't accept the results. Outgoing President Joseph Kabila, who has ruled the country since his father was killed in 2001, said Sunday that the election's preparations are going smoothly. Mukwege said the road to democracy is difficult, claiming that Kabila hasn't made the changes needed to put the country on that path. Efforts to boost global action against climate change are stuttering as severely key nations have objected to a key United Nations-backed report on the impacts of rising temperatures at the COP24 talks in Poland. Many developing nations say they are already suffering from the effects of climate change, especially in South Asia and Africa, where water shortages and intense storms are putting lives and livelihoods in danger. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Five months ago, a bustling fish market stood at Kachulu on the shores of Malawi's Lake Chilwa. Now, hundreds of fishing boats lie marooned across the vast bay as vultures circle over the cracked, sun-baked mud. Water levels here fluctuate annually, but scientists say climate change is making the seasonal dry-out of the lake far more dramatic. Fishermen are being forced to leave and look for work elsewhere, says Sosten Chiota of the non-governmental organisation LEAD, Leadership for Environment and Development.
Climate change contributes to the current recessions that we are experiencing. Because you can see that in 2012 there was a recession where the lake lost about 80% of its water. Then it recovered in 2013, but not fully. So since then, every year, we've been experiencing these recessions.
Policymakers gathering at the COP24 climate talks say it is developing countries like Malawi that are being hit hardest by the impacts of climate change. The charity WaterAid has released a report ranking the countries worst hit by water shortages, with Sudan, Niger and Pakistan making up the top three. WaterAid's Jonathan Farr spoke to VOA via Skype from the COP24 conference.
There's people who are living with the impacts of climate change right now, and they're feeling those impacts not through carbon but through water. And as we've seen over the past few years, and we'll continue to see for many years to come, unfortunately, is a huge increase in water stress and water absolute water scarcity.
Richer nations have pledged $100 billion a year for poorer nations to deal with the consequences of climate change, but WaterAid says they are failing to deliver. Scientists say emissions of carbon dioxide would have to be reduced by 45% to have any hope of keeping global warming below 1.5 degrees Celsius, the target agreed in the Paris climate deal. But the number of coal-fired power stations, the most polluting form of energy generation, is growing. The German organization Ergovolt calculates that $478 billion had been invested into expansion of the coal industry between January 2016 and September 2018, including in Africa. Ergovolt's director, Heffa Schücking.
14 African countries now, the first coal plants are being developed. It's completely crazy. Economies that could just be leapfrogging to a renewable energy economy that instead are having, largely by foreign companies, having coal plants being pushed on them as a solution to energy problems.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization warns that climate change will exacerbate the impact of some diseases and health problems, including malaria, malnutrition, and heat exposure. There is little optimism at the talks that much concrete progress will be made, as several countries, including the United States, Russia, and Saudi Arabia, have already voiced objections to a key scientific report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Tunisian President Beji Said Isbis has taken a number of actions that seek to isolate the Ennahda party, which has the largest number of seats in parliament. He has met with members of the Committee for the Defense of Opposition Martyrs, Chokri Belaid and Mohamed Brahimi, who were assassinated in 2013. The committee has alleged that Ennahda plans to assassinate political figures. The president triggered a controversy when he accused Ennahda of having a secret body that works against opposition. Radwan Masmoudi, president of the Center for the Study of Democracy and Islam in Tunisia, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the rift between the coalition partners in Tunisia.
Well, I think the president is angry with Ennahda because Ennahda has refused his demand, his repeated request to replace Prime Minister Youssef Chahed. This crisis started about 6 months ago, and Ennahda maintained that Youssef Chahed should stay in his position because we need stability in the country and because we have elections next year for presidential and parliamentarian elections. And there is no point in replacing the government less than 1 year before the election. And I think the president took offense with that, and he basically announced the end of the coalition between Nida Tunis and Ennahda. And it seems that he now wants to retaliate against Ennahda for taking that position and for allowing Youssef Chahed to remain in office.
Tunisian president has also received members of the Committee for the Defense of Martyrs, Chokri Belaid and Mohamed Brahimi, which made new accusations that Ennahda planned to assassinate opposition figures. The committee asked the president to allow it to be heard at the National Security Council, presided over by the president himself, and to form a special committee at the level of the presidency to monitor this issue. What's your take on that?
Well, this committee actually belongs to the far-left Popular Front. And these accusations are not new at all. They have been made repeatedly for the last several years. And I think nobody really is taking them seriously because the Popular Front simply wants to gain some political traction and reduce the appeal of Ennahda as an opponent or as another political party. So it is a political maneuver by the Popular Front to gain some popularity and to attack its opponent. And I think the president made the mistake by listening to them or by giving them undue support or undue attention and raising them to the level of the National Security Council. And actually, these accusations are in the hands of the court. And it is the judicial system, it is the court, that will review these accusations and will make a decision. The presidency does not need to get involved in this issue because it's already in the hands of the court.
So how do you think the new rift between the Tunis and the Nahda movement would impact the political stability in Tunisia?
I think that Tunisia has benefited a lot from this pact or coalition government between Nahda and Nida. These are the two main political parties, and that these frictions and these contentious issues between Nahda and Nida need to be resolved very quickly, and they need to go back, or they should go back as quickly as possible to working together for the benefit of the country, because we need a strong government and we need unity in the country to maintain not only political stability, but also to prepare for the elections that are coming soon, and also to work on economic reforms that are very badly and urgently needed and cannot be delayed any further. So the coalition and the consensus, the spirit of consensus between Nahda and Nida should be restored and should be maintained.
Yeah, that was Radwan Masmoudi, president of Center for the Study of Democracy and Islam in Tunisia. He spoke to VOA's Mohamed El Chinawi. Startup Kano is a techno hub that allows young entrepreneurs to connect, grow, and expand their business. Aisha Tofa is one of its co-founders. Named among the 2017 100 most inspiring women in Nigeria by the Guardian newspaper, she talked with Kano-based reporter Nuseba Ibrahim about some of the achievements of the organization.
What makes us different from other hubs in Kano is, first, we offer co-working spaces. And with these co-working spaces, we have subscriptions for three categories of people. We have for students, for startups, and for freelancers. So when you come in with your business, we offer you a space, internet, and of course, tea. So you can meet a lot of people with different startups, and from there you get to collaborate and work together. Also, we organize demo days where startups will come and pitch their businesses to investors, and from there they can get investments. Also, we have a women community, like the WinTech community. It's the first of its kind in Kano. We also have the Facebook developer cycle for women and other communities like that. So with that, I think we are very different from other hubs in Kano.
Okay, what sort of achievements have you recorded since the inception of your company?
Okay, we have a reach of over 1,000 women that are in business. We have incubated more than 10 startups and they are fully running. We have been recognized by both international and local organizations, and we have worked with them, and we are also creating more partnerships with these organizations.
Yeah, can you explain at least succinctly one or two success stories that you've recorded?
Yeah, of course. We have Samaha's Collection. She's just 16 years old and she's a fashion designer. She's already up and running. We also have Afmam. Afmam are into shoes and bags making, and they're doing very excellent.
How many startups and other businesses has this platform been able to help?
Okay, we are currently working with over 50 startups in Kano and outside Kano. Some we collaborate, some we accelerate them. We do events with them. So far we are working with over 50.
Has the help provided to any of these businesses created jobs for youths and reduced the number of unemployed youths here in Kano, or unemployment generally?
Yeah, of course. Like the Samaha's Collection and Afmam I've mentioned, they all have staff and other startups too that are working with us in the hub.
What kind of challenges have you experienced in the course of carrying your work since you started?
Actually, the major challenge has been awareness. You know, the North is not really keen with technology stuff, so we have to work. We've been working very hard, you know, to introduce a lot of things that, you know, that is linked with technology.
What kind of solutions do you think, if available, will solve these challenges that you face?
I think mainly is the resources. If we can have enough resources, we'll make more awareness, we'll do more classes, more, you know, events, seminars and stuff like that to make everything go okay.
That was Aisha Tofa. She was speaking from Kano with reporter Nusaiba Ibrahim. Angola's most famous operatic tenor hopes to inspire more Africans to take up the classical music form. Nelson Ibo has performed around the world and is currently starring with the Heartbeat Opera Company on stage in New York. He recently sang in Washington, where VOA Portuguese service Mayara de la Salette met up with him.
Nelson Ibo started singing at church in Angola's capital, Luanda, where he says he met the person who opened doors to a wider world.
I'm an Angolan tenor. I came from Angola, from singing in church. And then from there I met Mr. Mario Gama, that was our national folkloric singer. And he also used to sing in church. So he took me to sing with him in all the concerts, in churches.
Ibo sang at events at the Performance Hall in Luanda, and at 18, impressed a listener enough to win a scholarship.
Someone from the UN came, and he told me, well, let's get out of here. I'll take you to Spain, and you will be studying music in there because you have a great talent to sing opera. I'm like, okay, well, let's do this.
Ibo's main concern, he was the main breadwinner for his parents and some of his 14 siblings.
We had a very difficult life there, and actually that took me to do this work, right? To go and sing everywhere and get the money, bring the money, and give to them and help them so they would eat the next day. I was feeling guilty from leaving them. But on the other hand, it was fantastic to go to a different country and sing opera.
His coaches in Spain included Plácido Domingo, one of his heroes.
As an Angolan, and that is something that doesn't happen.
Ibo moved to the United States in 2008 to study and perform. Since then, he has been on stages around the world. Whenever he goes on stage, he recalls leaving his relatives years ago.
They are the feeling for everything, like seeing them there in that door waiting for me, saying goodbye to me, and me going to that UN car that was right stopping on my door.
At age 34, the tenor says he has another dream to fulfill, teaching young people about opera.
I wanted to go one day to Angola. Now that I'm in this fantastic career, and bring my talent, bring everything I learned to make them learn the beautiful world of music.
That would be another high note in Nelson Ibo's lofty music career. Mayra de la Salette, VOA News, Washington, D.C.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
Host Larry London for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.